Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, but before we go on with today's episode, let me tell you about a great sponsor of the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast, and that is AutoNation. If you're looking to buy or sell a vehicle, AutoNation is where you want to go. They're the largest auto retailer from coast to coast, and their friendly and knowledgeable staff here in South Florida will help you save big on huge selection of new cars, trucks, and SUVs, Toyota, Honda, Chevrolet, Mercedes-Benz, and much, much more. If you're looking to buy pre-owned, shop AutoNation's huge selection of one-priced pre-owned vehicles. They're all clearly marked with one price, their lowest price, guaranteed. Or if you just want to get rid of that old car, turn it in for cash today. Get a top dollar offer and check the same day. They'll buy your car with no purchase necessary. Is your check engine light on? Right now, get their services you need at low AutoNation prices. Oil changes, tires, batteries, and more. All for less. Call or visit AutoNation.com to schedule your appointment today. If you are in the market for a new car, DM us at 3 Yards Per Carry. That's at the number 3 Yards Per Carry on Twitter. And I'll give you an AutoNation senior manager your info so they can reach out to you directly and walk you through the buying process. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry. This is me, Chris Kaufman. I'm going to host today. I'm going to play the host because I'm going to pepper Alfredo Arteaga with lots of questions. But we don't have Simon Clancy today. Sorry for those Simon fans out there. We have replaced him with a special guest, which will be on, or who will be on in the second half of the show. And that is Ethan Skolnick, the godfather himself of Five Reasons Sports Network. So he'll be on to discuss the Dolphins with us. He's got a lot of experience, obviously, following the Dolphins.
People, you forgot to tell the people that Simon is actually covering the Eagles-Titans game.
I wanted to leave that out because that feels like a betrayal. I don't want to hurt our listener's psyche in that way.
But do you think that Simon will have the opportunity to talk to a certain backup quarterback?
You know what? Hopefully he will if he ever puts the towel down and stops toweling his taint after the game. Then he might be able to get a question in. Yeah. Because we all know how spick and span that Mr. Tannehill likes to keep his business. But anyway, I want to get into, we've got a lot of stuff to get into, and so we're going to get right into it because there was a week of practices last week. Started off with a bang. We talked to you last week on the podcast. During the weekend, rather, there was a change at the offensive line coach, I guess the offensive line coaching, with Dave DeGuglielmo taking over for Pat Flaherty. We talked a little bit about that. And then there was a week of practices, and we saw also Brian Flores kind of admitted that Ryan Fitzpatrick was ahead and was the number one quarterback right now.
And reinforced that today, too.
And reinforced it again today after a week of practices and after a scrimmage. So let's get into it. The week of practices, Alf, you were there every single day. Every single day. What did you see? First off, let's start with the quarterback position. That is the headline position. What did you see during the week of practices?
Well, I think people are getting a little ahead of themselves by saying that Josh Rosen is really coming on and overtaking Ryan Fitzpatrick. All he's merely doing is looking as good as Ryan Fitzpatrick and sprinkling in a couple of days where he's actually looked better than Ryan Fitzpatrick. So he's actually drawing close to Ryan Fitzpatrick, but has he overtaken him? Well, Coach Flores today reiterated, no, he has not. Mm. And as it turns out, it seems that Ryan Fitzpatrick will start on Thursday. At least that's every indication we've gotten so far. And pretty much what has happened during this quarterback battle is that Josh Rosen started so bad that a lot of people were proclaiming the whole competition absolutely dead. Mm-hmm. And then he started showing glimmers of competency, and people started elevating those performances to really, really good when they really weren't. I will say this. He had a very good scrimmage. I felt he was very good in that scrimmage, but let's grade it. You know, if we're going to really applaud his performance, let's grade it like he's a big boy. That was an
interesting
end zone to Xavier Howard that blew his best drive of the day.
Ah, that's right. At the end of the, this was at the end of the, you're referring to at the end of the scrimmage. It was basically the last throw of the scrimmage, was it? It was one of them.
It was the last throw of live football.
Yeah, so it
did goal line work after that.
Okay, and at the end of the scrimmage, he was driving. This was after, though, by the way, a really big pass to Kenny Stills down the field. Yes. Which is, I don't see the controversy here. Some people are like, you know, Xavier Howard blew it. He could have intercepted that ball. And other people are like, hey, he threw it out there for his receiver to make a play, and he did. And especially in that situation, you know, they're kind of like, it's kind of like an end of game situation, desperation situation. And he made the right call. He made the right throw, made a big play.
Yeah,
got him down there.
It was a great drive all around. I think,
and then capped it off by throwing one right into Xavier Howard's hands. Evidently,
yeah, he called because it was everything was tempo, and first of all, he was really accurate, and that bomb to Kenny Stills, it was just a great play by Stills. Mm. My notes from that exact play was he throws it deep to Stills, and this is going to be intercepted because it looked like Xavier Howard had a beat on it. It looked like Xavier Howard was actually measuring the ball, and then Kenny Stills just beat him to it.
He was like punt returning. He's like backing up for a punt.
Yeah, like he saw it coming, and he did throw it out there. That was a good 55 yards out in the air. But he drives the team all the way down to the five, calls a tempo play, calls a quick out, and Xavier Howard ran the route for Isaiah Ford, and the ball went through both of his hands, went behind him and into Isaiah Ford's hands. For a touchdown. So if we're going to grade him.
Well, good on Ford, though.
Yeah. He was there. You know,
it's hard to make plays on tip ball. So that's good on Isaiah Ford. And I got a couple of questions on this, though, for you because you're there. Okay. So do you think if you've said that you think maybe the Rosen train is getting a little farther along, getting a little. So. Do you think that is in part because, I mean, does Rosen just look more attractive next to a Ryan Fitzpatrick? I mean, he's clearly younger. He's got fresher legs. He's got a better arm and he can spin the ball better. Do you think that's really part of it, that Rosen doesn't have to do as much to be called more, you know, better player than Ryan Fitzpatrick, and that's part of the reason. And is that even fair? If that is the case, I mean, is that just fair to say? I mean,
well, I made the point on Twitter not too long ago where a guy was telling me, I heard that that Fitzpatrick was better on this day. You know, why did you grade it a tie? And I said, well, I felt that. No, why did you give it to Rosen? And I said, well, I felt that Rosen was equal to Fitzpatrick. But Rosen is being handicapped by his teammates in these practices because he has not gotten off of second team. He's had second team wide receivers, second team tight ends, second team offensive line, more importantly. Okay? I don't mind the wide receivers because his second unit almost always has Preston Williams, almost always has Isaiah Ford. I think both guys are capable NFL wide receivers. He also gets a lot of run with Allen Hurns. There's nothing to complain about there.
But what about like Jakeem Grant or somebody like that?
No, he hardly ever works with Jakeem Grant, only QB warmups.
Okay.
So, you know, and remember, Jakeem Grant has missed now 3 days in a row now?
Days.
Is it three or four? No, it is four. It is, let me see. Yes, four. He's missed 4 days in a row. So, he hasn't worked with him that much. So he's had fine skill talent around him, but that offensive line, that second team offensive line, you know, he just doesn't have much time.
Right.
And Fitzpatrick, for, you know, whatever we may think of the first team offensive line, I don't think it's particularly great. It still does have Laurent Tunsil on it.
Mm.
And Jesse Davis, I think, has had a decent camp.
That's promising to hear because, you know, listen, that right tackle position, a lot of teams spend first round picks to fill it and fill it right. And you know, if you get a starter, if you get a guy that's worthwhile as a starter just from your own roster, you know, kind of shopping from your own closet, then that's something. Although I wouldn't put Jesse Davis there yet until we see him go. And this is old stuff we went through on the podcast. Remember the list of who he's going to face?
Yeah.
So he's going to have a bumpy ride.
What's also interesting is that today the first depth chart was released and Jordan Mills is listed as the starter at right tackle.
You know, I got a bone to pick with that though. On the Jordan Mills situation, because Dave Hyde, who I respect him tremendously, wrote an article where he basically said, you know, explicitly, Pat Flaherty, one of the reasons he was hired, the big reason he was or fired, was because he wouldn't give a leg up to the young players, to the rookies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so he couldn't be on board anymore because they needed to see these young guys play and they want to start, you know, Shaq Calhoun and obviously Michael Dieter and stuff like that. And I got a bone to pick with that. I don't know what you feel about it, but listen, I mean, if you're Chris and he specifically, Dave Hyde said higher ups, so he wasn't necessarily saying Flores, you know. And so if you're Chris Greer and you're looking at, like, how do you excuse yourself there, because you signed Jordan Mills, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't have to sign Jordan Mills. You signed him for like a couple million dollars as a veteran that has a lot of skins on the wall playing right tackle. So what do you expect your offensive line coach to do? But, you know, if he's got a bunch of young rookie scratch off tickets and then a guy that has a bunch of skins on the wall, he's probably going to be like, yeah, I think I want to start the guy with experience.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand why these teams do this with the depth chart, because that depth chart that was released today was completely phony baloney. Jordan Mills.
Yeah, it was totally.
He has not taken a first team snap at right tackle in five practices. That's half a snap.
And we see where this is going too. Since Dave DeGuglielmo took over, I mean, Jesse Davis has been at right tackle every single practice since Dave DeGuglielmo got elevated, and Shaq Calhoun and Michael Dieter have been part of the starting rotations ever since then as well. Although Shaq Calhoun did rotate in that first string, as I understand it, with guys like Will Holden and some other guys.
Yeah, but I mean, it's looking like Shaq Calhoun once again. Mm-hmm. Grabbed a hold of that spot, and today was a walkthrough day, which suggested, you know, I don't know what I can report, but I'll just go ahead and say it because I said it in the note. That offensive line that I posted, Tunsil, Dieter, Kilgore, Calhoun, Davis, those were the guys that were out there with the first team walking through today. There's only a day of practice till the game on Thursday. So that could be the starting offensive line.
I'd bet so much money on that exact line being the starting line for the preseason game number one on Thursday. But you know, getting back to the Josh Rosen thing, like, how do you score it? You wrote a Twitter thing earlier and you kind of did like a boxing scorecard on Josh Rosen versus Ryan Fitzpatrick. How would you score it? I mean, do you take directionality into account here? Like, does the guy that's coming on lately, does he get more points for you, or is it just the whole competition, the whole couple of weeks?
I think it's the whole competition, the whole couple of weeks, and a lot of people tend to fall in love with the completion and the fake touchdown, because trust me, these are fake touchdowns, because sometimes some of these guys are running free at the 15-yard line, and our free safety that can grab the angle and stop them at the two is giving up because
I see the whistle is blown. You know, actually, there was a video today, and Preston Williams had it out and up, and it looked like a 24. Is that Torrey McTyer? I forget who that is. Anyway, he had a big completion on Torrey McTyer, but you saw the safety come over and tag him, and it was like, oh, touchdown, Preston Williams, big play. I was like, okay, it was a big play.
Yes.
But the safety tagged him. Yes, he did. And this is not live, you know, tackle everybody to the ground situations.
But people fall in love with all these plays. I tend to look at different things. What I do is that I process the formation and then I look at the route combinations. And what I do is that most of these guys are right-handed. And what I mean right-handed is that they tend to start their progressions right-handed. Mm-hmm. And in practice, especially in practice, you're usually not going to go too deep into progressions because the rush is going to get there. They're going to blow the whistle. They're going to call sack. They're going to call no play, right? So you're always going to see the first or second read get targeted on most of these practice plays. So what I do is I watch whatever the route combination is on that side, and I see, you know, what is it that the play is designed to do and what the quarterback actually did. Mm-hmm. And then what I do is I replay it in my mind, and I say, okay, now I know what he was looking at. For many days, Josh Rosen was just not trusting that window was actually open. He was hesitating. At the bottom of his drop, he was hesitating to let the ball go because he was seeing I'm not saying that he was seeing monsters out there, but he's seeing smaller windows than what they actually were. While Ryan Fitzpatrick was letting it rip. And yeah, some of them do get intercepted. But if you don't get intercepted in camp, you're probably not trying. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think Josh Rosen has turned a corner in that regard. He's trying more things, and he's being a little bolder with his selections. So yeah, he's come on. He's earned the grade that he's gotten. But you saw how I scored it so far. He's behind a point with one practice to go before the game.
Yeah, I think what people don't understand is that, you know, a lot of these situations that you're getting, you're reading the field and you're going through your progression. You have to read the apex player. There's often first window and second window for these routes, and some of the issues that you would have with a Josh Rosen from you know, maybe a year ago with Arizona is he kept unnecessarily going second window. And putting a lot of pressure on his receivers because of that. And if the timing is not there for that, then it just really gets, you know, it gets hairy. So I think it sounds like, in some of the instances, I know some others around camp have been sort of criticizing him for this as well, is being a little late. I think going with that second window, maybe a little too much, or checking down a little bit too much. Although it is worth noting also that in this offense, the extremely well-timed check down is a huge part of it. And is a big part of how they move the ball down the field. So checking down is not automatically a bad thing. And this, I mean, Phillip Rivers and Tom Brady are the best I've seen at it. They're you know, fantastic quarterbacks, but yeah,
let me just say today I gave I don't know if you've been watching my notes every single day on fivereasonsports.com, but I hand out a practice MVP trophy, and usually it's two or three guys, and then I say who has struggled. Today, Sam Egwuan was a guy who struggled, and the reason he struggled is because, good Lord, was he having a hard time picking up Kenyon Drake out of the backfield.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. So,
well, he just, I mean, despite having, he says that he's run a 4.45. We didn't get to that on the pod the other day, but last week. But he says that he has like an Instagram picture of him supposedly running a 4.45. Coming out of college, though, he was like 220 some odd pounds and ran solidly in the 4.7s. So I suspect he could have some issues with Kenyon Drake at times.
Yeah. It was bad today.
Yeah.
And that's somewhere where Jerome Baker has, you know, he shined, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he has his injury, and I don't know, you know, if it's going to hold him out, because, you know, this regime is not very forthcoming as far as injuries.
No.
They just tell you, okay, this guy is out today, and it could be anything. It could be a spinal cord injury, or it could be a hangnail, you know what I mean? So we just don't know. But Jerome Baker, we can only deduce, you know, and this is all speculation, that it was a groin injury. And he came back to the field, but he did not participate in the rest of practice.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he will play on Thursday. I would say.
Given that this is preseason, I think caution is there, especially since they've placed so much on him. And
he's had so many splash plays this training camp.
I think that if you're looking for a guy on the defense that, you know, as Paul Pasqualoni used to say, has the sombrero on him, it's Jerome Baker, because they're going to use him in a lot of different ways.
Yep.
It's pretty clear that they do view him as a line of scrimmage pass rusher when they need him as a fifth rusher. He's got the speed, clearly, to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just whether the size, the, you know, arm lengthiness, I guess, and physicality, whether those factor in on actual game day when the real bolts are flying and everybody's being as physical as they can. We'll see about that. I'm hoping for the best, because I really like him. I mean, did you get a feel for his personality, what he is in the locker room?
Oh, it's really gregarious and, you know, and really forthcoming with whatever you ask him, he's going to give you a full answer. And really good with the media, even when, because usually the media relations people, they'll make certain players available, and other players, you know, you could tell that there's some players on this team that say, you know what, I'm not talking to the media today,
right?
You know, just shoo these people away from me. And I could sense it because there was a – I'm not going to out this player, but there was a player I wanted to talk to today because I had some really good questions for him. And I could tell that that guy had wanted no part with anybody. So I didn't bother. But other guys are really outgoing. Xavier Howard is one of them. Nobody is more outgoing and accommodating with the media than Jerome Baker. He really is. He talks to everybody and will answer any question. He has a big smile on his face, goes 100 miles an hour. He's the Jakeem Grant on the defense. He's like, if you have 53 of those guys, you should be a really, really good football team.
Well, speaking of Jakeem Grant and him being in the same sentence as Jerome Baker, who are the most locked-in guys, the most locked-in players that you've seen through – I mean, you've been to 10 practices now. So the guys that are just always bringing it, the guys that are seem always focused, who are the most locked in?
Well, let me tell you one thing. After day one, I looked at Preston Williams, and I was like, what in the hell does this guy think he's doing? Because I think I told you on the podcast, he looked like
– You did.
– a nine-year veteran that had 75 touchdowns and had made 7 Pro Bowls. And this was beneath him. You know what I mean? And I even remarked it to – I spoke to several people. One of them, Omar Kelly, and everybody was remarking about, like, what is he doing? Well, so, I think somebody got into him because since then –
Well, you know what got into him? This is my theory. If you look at the timeline, Allen Hurns, when he was signed, from the moment Allen Hurns was signed to now – Preston Williams has had his hair on fire, at least as per people like you who are at practice and watching it.
Yeah, and a lot of people, like, you know, one guy made fun of me, like, really, what can you get from a wide receiver warm-up? I'm like, a ton, trust me. You can get a ton from a wide receiver warm-up. Trust me, if your wide receivers look like crap in a warm-up, they're probably crap.
Yeah, you know, and people ask me the same thing because when I go to the Shrine practices every year, you know, where do you see – value when you're looking at these guys, where do you see guys that'll click for you and say, wow, that is an NFL player? And you'd be surprised that it can actually be in the warm-up period. Because that's especially if you're able to be on the field and sort of get closer and kind of, I'm not saying anything weird, but feel the way that they're structured and the way that they move. You can get a lot from it, and you can get a lot from their demeanor and how they're approaching it. It's surprising and probably something that you don't necessarily know unless you've been there trying to do it.
Yeah, and the same thing with the quarterbacks. Like, when the quarterbacks do their warm-up period, it's an extended warm-up, and you want to see accuracy because they're throwing an 18-yard out. They're throwing a little – they actually throw some bubble screens too. So they're throwing, like, an array of – passes that they're actually going to have to throw in the practice that follows the warm-up. So you want them to see some accuracy, some urgency. You know, you want to see them spin it. And
right.
And if they're killing ants in that part of practice, which, trust me, it happened once with Josh Rosen. those first 2 days were embarrassing. I wrote about it. Those first 2 days for both quarterbacks, really, were kind of embarrassing. They didn't look like pro quarterbacks. Like,
you, well, wait, not what the first 2 days. I thought Ryan Fitzpatrick was actually supposed to have been really good in practice on those first
two. Josh Rosen was horrific the first 2 days, but Fitzpatrick wasn't all that great. Where Fitzpatrick was ungodly was in minicamp. In minicamp, he looked like an MVP candidate. You know?
But okay, so you didn't. So yeah. Preston Williams, bit lax to start out. Maybe somebody gets in his ear. Maybe Allen Hurns gets signed, and he's like, "Holy shit!" Doing the numbers calculation in his head all of a sudden. So he's been locked in. Who else has been really locked in? We said Jerome Baker, said Jakeem Grant. Like, who are the? You know, just give me 53 of these guys.
Yeah, all right, I'll give you all 53 of them. I'll give you.
No.
All right, Adolphus Washington. He's going to make this team. He's going to make this team.
Okay.
Ted Carradine, going to make this team. I think.
All right. So he's locked in. He's like.
Yeah. I think Jonathan Woodard has a problem. I think he has a problem in his hands. He's doing things that other guys can do and are actually bigger and better at doing. So I don't think Jonathan Woodard might be a bubble guy. Andrew Van Ginkel, for being a late round draft pick, is going to get snaps on this team.
Looks a bit like a serial killer.
Yeah, if practice is any indication, this is a guy that's going to get anywhere between 15 to 25, maybe 20, 25
heads snaps in his freezer.
Maybe that and snaps in a football game. So, and of course, Sam Aguivant, everybody likes him. Eric Rowe has come on for a week straight now.
Yeah, that's been a surprising development.
Because
initially it wasn't so good, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, initially he was having problems. Montre Hardage had some moments. Today he was an absolutely unmitigated disaster.
Ooh, ouch. He's playing safety now, right? Yeah. I mean, safety in as much as probably a similar safety position to what you see the likes of Minkah Fitzpatrick playing,
let me say a lot of people were thinking that pass today that Rosen should have completed to Kenny Stills. Some people were saying it was overthrown. I don't know, if it hits both of your hands,
yeah,
you should have it, you know.
It is a very fine line when it's like over the shoulder and you got to run all out for it and flat out. It can be an inch too long, but you can't really fault the quarterback for that, because it's not like the quarterback can like dial it back that one inch, you know.
It was such a majestic pass, because it was one of those, you know, Rosen, you know, does the play fake and you see at the bottom of his drop, which is about 5.5, almost 6 steps, he just lets it rip. And that thing is maybe 55 yards in the air. So, you know, it's a play you want to have, but you see it and you're like, whoa, that's impressive. But
not to get on a side thing here, but Rosen specifically, because you mentioned the deep ball and he really belted it out there. What have you seen from him on the deep ball in practices this week? Because, you know, going back to UCLA, he struggled. He struggled with anything beyond 20 yards. And going to Arizona, he really struggled with anything beyond 20 yards.
Have you heard the term aim small, miss small?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I think that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to be safe with it, but he's getting the ball out there. Mm-hmm. He's just trying not to throw interceptions.
I see. So he's throwing it a bit long.
Yes.
So that he's afraid to underthrow it and turn it into a jump ball situation.
Yeah. He's letting it rip. He's winging it. He's winging it out there and trying to lead guys toward the sideline, or lead guys away from the safety.
And okay,
I said that Hardage had a really bad time, because Hardage, I think, was playing the arm and not the actual pass.
Mm.
And he was letting a guy like Kenny Stills. Mm. If you're a safety, you should be in front of Kenny Stills, okay, on a go route. You shouldn't let Kenny Stills beat you by 5 or 6 yards. And that's what happened on that play.
Do you think he could stand to put more air under it? I mean, some people like air under the deep ball. Some NFLers quite honestly don't.
This was as close to a game situation as you can get. And that thing out there, 55 yards on time. Like, I don't think it can be thrown any better.
Okay, so speak about that, the scrimmage, the game situation.
Mahomes can do it.
You know? Well, right, obviously. But let's speak about the scrimmage in terms of its game situation. You said that this was as close to a game situation as you get. Was it full tackling? Like, how was it out there? Like, what was the intensity?
The intensity was fine at the line of scrimmage. The hitting was strong at the line of scrimmage, but the hitting down the field was more rap, and they were calling the contact on the field. The referees were calling the contact. Like, they were blowing the whistle early.
Do you think it's going to be much more intense at the preseason game on Thursday?
Oh, I would. Oh, obviously, because they're going to have full tackling. But I thought that they were hitting. As far as the offensive line and the defensive line, there was contact there. You know, and some people were complaining, especially Armando Salguero was saying that they were a little late in getting stuff in. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they had some moments, especially –
the offense or the defense?
The offense, especially with all the pre-snap penalties. But I thought it had a lot to do with, I wouldn't say substitutions, but I think it was the play call. And I think they tried to do too much for what was a scrimmage. I think they should have just scripted plays and just ran them. But they really tried to simulate like a game situation, and they were actually calling plays. They had headsets on, and I'm sure I didn't see them, but they closed off one of the boxes, so I'm pretty sure they had assistants up there. And the assistants were probably, who knows, relaying stuff down, and they were trying to call plays against each other, and that's why they ran into so many pre-snap penalties.
Well, that's interesting. It's interesting that you actually bring that up about the play calling, because I know that I've heard you talk about Patrick Graham on the defensive side of the ball and how quickly he's getting in the personnel packaging and the play call in on defense. And then on offense, you know, at the scrimmage anyway, it seemed like maybe they were trying to do a little bit too much, and there was some kind of issue there. You're gonna see that a little bit more in the preseason setting, I think. And it'll be interesting to follow that storyline, because we do have both on both sides of the ball. We have new first-time play callers, do we not?
Yeah.
So it's definitely something to watch.
Yeah, because Ben Volin was there. He's a big fan for the New England Patriots now, which is odd why he was there. But, you know, I guess, you know, Belichick sent him out here to spy on whatever we're doing.
I think so.
Yeah.
Ben would do it. I know Ben. I've had beers with Ben.
Because the question was asked of Coach Flores, you know, these are going to be two first-time play callers, and Flores pointed out that the last preseason game, they always had an assistant call the plays, and the Patriots used to have Josh McDaniels cede the control to Chad O'Shea, and Chad O'Shea would call the plays in the fourth preseason game. And supposedly Patrick Graham had done it before also. So this is not a first, but it's a first for this team and a first for both of them.
And it could also be that there's
– by the way.
Yeah, but it could also be, as you suggested, I think, that there's just so much verbiage and so much that goes into the play call, like especially on offense and the way the I think the Patriots call their plays, and they might be calling several plays at the same time, stuff like that. Maybe it's just these guys are taking a bit to process that too.
Yeah, and a lot of people are going to like Patrick Graham, by the way. Hopefully this team doesn't hide his personality.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully this team is good. You know, hopefully his unit is good. You know, hopefully.
Well, the best way to hide everybody's personality is for the team to absolutely suck and then not get covered
if the defense is ranked 28th, nobody's going to give.
Nobody's going to give a damn about how cool Patrick Graham is.
Yeah, Patrick Graham's pretty fun. He's a fun guy. We'll answer questions also. Although
smart guy,
very very smart, absolutely. And I love the way he answers questions. They were asking him about, you know, 3-4 and 4-3 and all that. And he was like, I don't know what the hell none of that stuff is. All I can tell you, and he had a great quote, which was, all I can tell you is that we will have at least one defensive lineman out there.
So, you know what I like about listening to him, just from my personal experience, as opposed to Matt Burke a year ago and, you know, 2 years ago, is whenever I would listen to Matt Burke, he always sounds like he's able to sound good. Like he's able to sound like he knows what he's talking about, or you know, and a lot of people that I found, a lot of people that got into gaggles with him and would just talk shit with him, they were generally very impressed by him often. But when you do some digging, you do a little bit of digging on what he's saying, it was staggering how full of shit he was, and or at least that was my experience. As you go back and see what his recall was of certain plays and stuff like that, and what he was seeing and what he's describing out there versus what was actually happening, and what he's talking about his decisions about, you know, packaging and stuff like that. It sounded nice, but it was so full of shit. Just absolutely out the ears, full of shit. Yeah. And Patrick Graham, and I'm sorry to, you know, call out a guy like that, but it really was. And Patrick Graham, on the other hand, you know, when I listen to him and I hear him talking about things, I'm like, you know, if you dig and you look at it, because we've looked into the Patriots playbook, and there are plays from the straight out of their playbook out there that you can find in the public sphere. He knows what he's talking about. he's saying the right things. He's talking about the right things, and he's talking about them in the right way. And it's really interesting and really promising. All right. Well, we've gone through a lot of this week of practice and gone through the scrimmage, and we've had enough of just us two assholes talking to you guys. Now we're going to bring on Ethan Skolnick, the Grand Poobah of the Five Reasons Sports Network, and he's going to talk to us about a little bit of Dolphins history, a little bit of Dolphins present, and we're going to see where this team stacks up.
Hey, this is Seth Levitt, who you may not know.
And OJ McDuffie.
Who you definitely know.
And we're getting ready to dive back into the fish tank.
That's right, Drew. Season 2 of the Fish Tank podcast right here on the Five Reasons Sports Network kicks off on Tuesday, August 6th with our biggest catch yet. Hall of Famer Jason Taylor.
I got the first hit in, and then he proceeded to grab my face mask. And he, I swear to God, I've never seen anybody throw so many uppercuts in so little time. And he hit me in my stomach, my solar plexus, and my esophagus. But it was like a boomerang. Like I just kept boomeranging. But the whole time he was holding my face mask and my head couldn't move.
Hey, bobblehead.
Like this was boomerang before boomerang. He was even out on phones.
So don't miss JT, OJ, DJ Preach, and myself.
And all new guests.
And most importantly, more of the best Miami Dolphins stories that you've never heard.
Exactly, Big Seth. We've got an amazing lineup of your favorite Dolphins, from guys I played with to guys I looked up to, and even some players you'll be cheering for this season.
Hey, don't forget those of us who work behind the scenes,
too. Know I won't do that, man, because the Fish Tank takes you where no other Dolphin podcast can, with some of the funniest, wildest, and most interesting stories of what goes on with your favorite team, players, and coaches when the cameras aren't watching.
You can find the Fish Tank on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you do your podcast listening. So subscribe and start downloading today.
Thanks for diving in.
This is Ricky J. Mark. In a world where sports radio continues to shift around the whims of corporate interests, we understand that the constant, unexpected changes can be exhausting from time to time. So that's why we think you should sit back, relax, and take five. Reasons, that is. So go ahead, grab your smartphone, and subscribe to the Five Reasons Sports Network, available on virtually every podcast platform. We're South Florida's fastest growing on-demand sports media network, so you decide when you want to tune in. You decide when you want to listen. Because we know your life can be hectic, go ahead, fall in love with our lineup, including Five on the Floor, 3 Yards Per Carry, The Fish Tank, Light-Skinned Opinions, and Cinco Razones, whenever you want. All you need is an internet connection. So go ahead, tune in. Try us out. We're by Miami, for Miami, and spreading rapidly throughout South Florida.
All right, and we're back. And now we have a special guest. We have Ethan Skolnick, the head honcho of Five Reasons Sports Network, is on here to talk to us about the Dolphins and to make fun of Simon while he's not here.
And, exactly. No, that's the real reason, actually.
He jumped on it. He jumped on us so fast when we put the offer out there. We said, Simon is not going to be here. Do you want to get on? Like, what do you think? But yeah. So anyway, Ethan Skolnick is on with Alf and I. We're going to talk about the Dolphins a little bit more, what's been going on this week in practice and in the scrimmage, and finish up talking about the Atlanta Falcons game coming up this Thursday. So Ethan, how you been? How's the week going with Dolphins practice? Like, is this really depressing for you, or is this just giving you bad memories, or what?
I'm more depressed about the Dow, actually. That's why I came on this you guys.
That's the other reason he jumped on. That's
the real reason. I mean, I've been out all day doing like 3 million things.
Yeah.
Down 7.5.
How much did I lose today?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't even want to look.
I did. I did.
I'm sure you looked. This is my thing, though. I should look because this is the time you're supposed to look because, as you know, this is the time you're supposed to dump the money in, but I always go like groundhog right back.
Yeah, Kramer gets on TV and starts screaming that we're having a sale, you know?
Right, we're having a sale, right? Sale on Amazon. But yeah, no, I was out doing all kinds of other stuff. But no, I have been at Dolphins camp a few days. I was out there the other day with Alf. That's one of the great things about this is I get to spend some quality time with him as he's sort of finding the line between giving a lot of information to his followers without pissing off the Dolphins. It's like this very fine line, like, because you can't give the formations, but you can kind of say they're doing something different, right? So it's a tough thing. And, you know, I do think there are a lot of people who are out there watching who don't even know what the formations are, and Alf does, and so
that's thinner than the bid market on a day like today.
Correct. So it's tight, and so, but you know, I've enjoyed that, and I've enjoyed being out there a little bit. Obviously, I'm kind of more focused on the Heat now with five on the floor since I converted that, but. You know, one thing I will not do today, I promise, because somebody came at me on Twitter. Well, people come at me on Twitter all the time. I'm arguing with some guy right now, but some guy came at me on Twitter because they said every time I'm on with you guys or anything that I turn it into sort of telling the same Dave Wannstedt and Jimmy Johnson story. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to refer to anything that happened before what? I don't know, 2015 maybe? Like,
don't go there because that's the first question. That's the first question, Ethan.
You're going to do this to me.
I'm doing it.
Like the old man, but you make me feel like the old man. And then everybody gets pissed off because they're like, well, yeah. We know you covered the Dolphins 20 years ago, but you've been covering the Heat since. I know that upsets people.
Well, if you're the old man, like I'm also an old man for remembering all this stuff from when I was reading about it. So I think it's fine. The first question, you and I were discussing this earlier, actually. We wanted to talk about Preston Williams because obviously he has ascended to the level of godhood in Dolphins camp, or at least, you know, according to the things that you read and all the buzz about him. Obviously, he had a great scrimmage and was really productive. He seemed to have followed it up. Alf, is this fair to say? He followed it up with a good day today. So,
yeah, he was very good today.
So I asked this, I put this out on Twitter and immediately got, you know, responses from all the right people. I put this out. I said, we're going to discuss tonight, you know, is Preston Williams the most, you know, impressive in the first 10 days of camp so far, the most impressive rookie receiver that we've seen in the first 10 days of camp, you know, going all the way back to Chris Chambers? Maybe it's not as ridiculous a question as you might think. Now, what do you think, Ethan?
Well, first thing, you have to look at that they haven't drafted that many receivers high over the years.
That's
right?
True. So that's why it's not as ridiculous a question as you might think.
It really isn't, and I know somebody in the general media, a friend of mine, kind of went at it as a ridiculous question today. It's not because they have not drafted a lot of receivers high. In fact, if you really go back – see, you're doing this to me again, but if you really go back, like a lot of the receivers who've impressed in camp have been kind of the end of the line guys that were kind of competing for a fourth or fifth spot when you came in. So like, I'm going to go way back, 1997, Brian Manning was one guy. I remember him out of Stanford. He was the smart guy. I think they drafted him in like the sixth round. And I remember he was all the talk of camp that year and it didn't emerge into anything. Was this one fast enough? J.R. Tolver was another one you mentioned. Ooh. Robert Baker, the touchdown.
Yes, give me Robert Baker. Give it to me.
But I will say, Robert Baker was great in training camp and in preseason games. He actually became a rapper named Shiv Shivers. Well, he came. He did. And but Robert Baker.
That name up, Shiv.
No, Shiv Shivers. Shiv Shivers. But I listened to a couple of tracks. But one of the things about Robert Baker that was one of the great sort of locker room Dolphin stories was Robert Baker had one NFL catch. And I remember him being next to Ronde Gadsden in the locker room after he had that catch. And he said, I'm going to catch you. He never had another catch. That was the one. That was the only one. That's kind of like, just again, because I have to bring everything back to the Heat. That's kind of like a double overtime game in Atlanta that LeBron and Dwayne missed. And Chris Bosh was out on the floor at the end with Chalmers and Terrell Harris. And Terrell Harris, Alpha, remember this. Terrell Harris like had like 16 rebounds. And I went up to Terrell after the game. I said, that was quite a game. He says, I didn't do anything. I'm going to do that again. I don't think he had 16 rebounds the rest of his entire Heat career, actually, his entire NBA career. But yeah, that was Robert Baker, Shiv Shivers.
Shiv Shivers.
But they haven't – if you look at their top guys that they've drafted, Devontae Parker really didn't stand out in camp. Brian Hartline was drafted fourth round, I believe. It took him a little bit more time.
Ted Ginn.
Remember Patrick Turner. Patrick Turner was supposed to be the receiver in that.
And he was a disaster.
He was a third rounder in that draft.
Yeah, he couldn't play at all. Well, and there were a couple others. Okay, I was there, again, dating myself, 1997, first day of training camp. Teal Green crumpled right in front of me. That was the 15th overall pick in the draft. Jim, if he doesn't get hurt, I always contended Jimmy's tenure here. What I just did it. I brought up Jimmy, but I believe his I believe his tenure here would have gone differently. If he doesn't crumple in front of in that training camp because he was never the same, And then Jimmy, of course, passed on Randy.
Two years in a row, by the way.
Like, 2 years in a row. And then, that remember, that when they passed on Randy Moss, they took the white win, Randy Moss, Larry Shannon.
In
the third round, and he couldn't play either. Like, I mean, he was fast, but he couldn't play either.
He never suited up in an NFL game, ever.
No. So they really haven't had that many that were up high. I mean, remember, they've tried to patch it with, like, free agents like Mike Wallace or Brandon Marshall. When I say they, I mean, it's Chris Greer because he's been here for
decades. He's been there forever.
But it's different regimes making decisions. But they didn't have those guys. So I have to go back to the two guys that, you know, I covered and became close with, Chambers, and I'll throw in McMichael as a tight end. Those were the two guys that from the jump, like, you knew that first week. That Chris Chambers was going to be a player for them. And I'm not just saying that because he's in our network now, but you just knew with Chris. And Randy was even, in some ways, more impressive early on. Like, it was just, I mean, they couldn't get the ball to him enough, and then he was pissed because they didn't get the ball to him.
He had that touchdown against New Orleans in the first preseason game.
From the very beginning, Randy could play. And they've had other guys at other positions like that, and Derek Rogers or Zach Thomas through the years, and then others that they've had in recent years. Not as many, unfortunately, or else the team would have been better. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's not someone who just sort of jumps off the page at you. And so this guy is a little bit, and it's just, to me, the interesting question about this is a team that has no depth at so many important positions. I mean, starting at the two most important other than quarterback, the lines, and they don't have any depth there. We've talked about, you know, how they're trying to develop depth at the secondary. They don't have great depth at linebacker. Their running back depth, Alf was telling me the other day, he only likes two backs really on the roster. They don't have great – I don't think they have great tight end depth until we see Gesicki really step forward. But they have all this depth at wide receiver, and I don't know what they're going to do with it, because it's like they've got a bunch – they've got this kid with great potential, and then they've got a bunch of, like – again, they feel like the Heat to me in this way, like a bunch of B-minus to B-plus guys there.
The guys that you give $15 million a year. You give $15 million a year to those guys.
That's the problem, because you've talked about this, Jakeem Grant. What do you – right, well, the Heat would in the old days. But Jakeem Grant, like, okay, he's, you know, I mean, he's going to be expensive if he plays, but how much is he going to play? I know you want him to play more, but it's crowded, and I just don't, you know, bringing in another guy in the slot now in Hearns, I don't know how it all shapes out, but he looks to me like the one guy out there who could be a number one, and I don't know if any of the other guys on the roster can really be a number one.
Well, that's the thing that I brought up earlier is, like, so if we go down the list, if we're talking about the guys that they've gotten, we're talking about Derek Hagan in the third round. That's obviously not happening.
No. Nobody was impressed there.
Clyde Gates in the fourth round, nobody was impressed there. They traded a bunch of assets to get Leonte Carew. He never even made an impression, you know, 3 years down the road, really. Right. And Patrick Turner, we talked about, guys like this, and even Ted Ginn, who was the really high pick. I think people wanted to see it with Ted Ginn, and I think people wanted, to some degree, wanted to see it with Devontae Parker as well. But it was always a little bit of a stretch that early. They just weren't there. And that's not to say that Devontae Parker doesn't eventually, like, watch him have a ridiculous year this year. Who knows? But it wasn't there in the first training camp in the first couple of days. The ones that I would bring up that I would say, you know, hey, these guys did make an impression from the jump. Past Chris Chambers, of course, would be Devon Bess, who was an undrafted free agent.
Yes.
And then
during the preseason, he was not this the first 10 days of training camp.
I think that's fair. I think that's very fair. I think the coaches were really, really impressed with him, kind of on background. Mm-hmm. But I think that's fair about onlookers and you guys were at practice and you're seeing it's not necessarily making these big wow plays. But the other one, the one that everybody and this is the beat writer you're referring to, I know this is who he's thinking of, Jarvis Landry. The Dolphins took him in the second round. And I think right away it was clear that they got a receiver that's very competent out there. The question is, since he was a slot, he was so obviously like a slot receiver, would he have been called by an Xavien Howard a future number one, you know, in that 10 days into training camp? Would that have happened?
Probably not. And I, you know, I think, look, when they made the pick of Jarvis, I think just people who'd seen him in college and kind of had sort of seen his toughness and all that stuff, you know, thought he'd be a really good NFL player and thought it was a good pick at the time. But I think the difference with this kid is, you know, he looks like a boom or bust type player. And they haven't had enough of those at receiver. And, you know, the guys who can be number ones, there is a distinction. And we had that argument. Is Jarvis Landry a true number one? And I think we came to the conclusion that he's not. And look, Cleveland came to the conclusion that he's not, right? Like, I mean,
went out and bought one.
They just got one, right? That is one. Odell Beckham is one. There are only, we can maybe argue about this. I think there are really 12 to 15 true number ones in the NFL at any one time, right? I mean, we can name them. Hopkins is one. Julio Jones is one. You know, AJ Green is one, right? Beckham is
one. Tyreek Hill, if he's not.
Tyreek Hill is one, right? The guys who basically, if you have them as your number one, it really doesn't matter that much who your two and three are, because he's going to make those guys so much better, okay? Antonio Brown is a number one. You know, and then you go back a ways, okay, and Terrell Owens was a one, and Randy Moss was a one, and
sure,
and so, you know, Marvin Harrison was a one, et cetera, and in Indy, they probably had two number ones in Harrison and Wayne, but so that to me is a thing. They have not really, I mean, they tried to get one in Wallace, but he wasn't, right, okay, because he didn't fight for the ball enough. He couldn't run any of the intermediate stuff.
Right.
He was kind of made by Pittsburgh, which is always one of your fears when the Pittsburgh receiver goes somewhere else.
He did a lot. Like, I don't know if you saw it the same way, but when I was watching him in Pittsburgh, I mean, he did a lot of like what Chris Chambers did that made such a splash in Miami right away in that first year,
right,
as a slot receiver running go routes, you know, and running deep. And I think that he made a splash that way. Mike Wallace did. He kind of fit within the offense and fit a role, and he had a quarterback that really could lay it out for him. And I think that's what they bought, and that was kind of the mistake. They bought somebody really expensive that wasn't well rounded.
Right, and with Brandon Marshall, they bought somebody who was a one in terms of being a possession guy and accumulating a lot of catches, but not in terms of sort of taking the top off the defense. I mean, if you could have – I always said this. If Henny and Tannehill had played with the other receiver, I think they would have been better off. Like, Tannehill with Wallace, right, and it was Henny with Marshall. I feel like it would have been better off the other way. But you know, we talk about number ones though, there's a certain type, right? There's a physicality and size, right? There's the ability to separate enough. And there's the ability to get behind, get behind man coverage. You know,
getting behind the defense is, I mean, it could come down to size, but it can also come down to speed, right? I mean, they're substitutes. If you've got the length, then you know you can shave your speed a little bit down. You can be a little bit slower if you've got the length. If you don't have the length, then you better be faster. But a lot of those guys that we're talking about,
You do what the New Orleans Saints have been doing for ages, which is just bring in new specialist after new specialist to the defense, and then keep a number Mike Thomas.
So now Mike Thomas is arguably, if he's not top, he's top three in the NFL. Right, he's being paid like it.
Absolutely,
he can do all of those things. I think mentioning Chambers is interesting because if Chris was on this pod right now, he would tell you this because I was with him through all of this, you know, transformation for him. So he comes in the first year, and remember they had Gadsden, they had McKnight, right? This was after Leslie Shepard, I believe, right? Because Shepard
was the
previous year. So they had Gadsden, they had McKnight, they brought in James, and James had the speed, but sometimes had issues with his hands. And Gadsden had the hands, but didn't have the speed, right? So
no toes,
right, exactly. So you had those two guys, and if you remember that first year, I mean, I remember the numbers off the top of my head: 48 catches, 883 yards, I think 11 touchdowns, right? And Chris, you know, a lot of those were, and people say Jay couldn't throw the deep ball. I was in Indianapolis for, I believe, two deep touchdowns. Buffalo, two deep touchdowns. You know, Chris was able to get behind the defense, but a lot of that was he was the third guy. And he was getting matched up in the slot a lot, and he would tell you that. So then they transitioned off of that where Chris became the man, and it really took him – part of this was bad quarterback play, okay, which, I mean, Chris didn't play with a good quarterback, and no offense to Jay, but he didn't play with a plus quarterback until he went to San Diego and played with Rivers. But, you know, if you look at it, it really took him until – that year in 2005 under Saban, where he really put it together as a number one. That was the one year that he did it. And a lot of it, he'll tell you, was he had a conversation with Nick And Nick told him, we're going to go to you this year, okay, and this is what we want you to do. And for all the problems people have with Nick, Chris doesn't, actually, because you know, he felt Nick was pretty straightforward with it. Chris and Jason Taylor are like the two that had no issues with Nick. So, you know, I just think that, you know, with Chris, we saw it's difficult to become a number one. And I think so Preston Williams is a guy who's sort of obviously big talent, issues off the field, which are, you know, to me questionable. And then, you know, but he's coming in here and he's kind of popped out of nowhere. And so a guy like Xavien Howard is looking at this guy and he's like, I would assume the way he's looking at it is this guy has physical tools that other receivers on this team don't have, right? That's why he's saying he's a number one. And it's no offense to Kenny Stills, who I think has made the absolute most of what he has and serves a definite role for this team. And it's no offense to Albert Wilson and Jakeem Grant, who obviously we saw last year in the first like 5-6 games when they were utilized what they can do. And it's no offense to Devontae Parker's gifts, but this kid seems to have gifts beyond Devontae Parker. Right. And Devontae Parker was a first round pick. So I don't know. It is one of the more promising developments of camp.
To me, mic drop was just hearing what Xavien Howard said about him, but also, you know, what somebody, Carl Durrell, who's been here before as a wide receivers coach, what he had to say about him and talking about, you know, his bend and his flexibility, how he runs routes. He's a 6 foot, he's close to 6 foot five. He runs routes like a 5'8" guy. That's really rare. You know, if you're talking about things that a guy has that's kind of really rare, and you're talking about it within that route running context rather than just pure size speed profile, then you're really talking about something. But I mean, Alf, you've watched them all through the week, all through the scrimmage. I mean, have you seen any, have you seen better? I mean, have you seen better from anybody?
No. And what I can say about Preston Williams is that other receivers, you see that they hurry through the route, like trying to get it over with because they have, maybe the clock in their head is going off as in I got to complete this route to be within the window of what the quarterback is seeing so I can get the ball and not actually pay attention to the detail of actually running the route the way it's asked. And Preston Williams, since I think the first day where he was pretty bad, since that day, he's been as good as you can be. Every route is crisp. You see that he actually cares about details. He never gets, you know, Cardinal is never on his ass. He's on other guy's ass, not in his. So, you know, and like I said, he's a snap monster right now. He's taking snaps with first team, second team, even third team. You know, I would say nobody else has gotten as many snaps as Preston Williams has had. So he's obviously a favorite of the coaching staff, and I would say he made the team already. It's going to have to take something catastrophic for him not to make the team.
So if
another off-field incident.
Well, right. But here's the thing, guys. If he's made the team, I mean, how many are they keeping? Because, I mean, if they're not making a trade, like you've got Stills, you've got Parker, you've got Wilson, you've got Grant rounding back into shape. So, I mean, that's five. I guess Hearns not in the picture then?
Yeah, I think Allen Hearns is then in trouble. And you have to make a calculation. Like, you know, do you want to keep to these rigid thoughts of what you need? Or are you just going to keep the best five football players? Or the best six football players? And if that's the case, then yeah, you're probably going to have to cut an Allen Hurts.
But you're rebuilding, so you have to keep the best football players, right? Aren't we at this stage?
Yeah.
And the youngest. I mean, that's
right.
They're going to go with the youth movement here. I think it's worth noting. I think they could keep six guys personally, based on what they have. They're a young team that's trying to keep assets into the future. They're not so worried about this year. And so to me, trying to cobble together the exact right number at every position isn't really going to be a huge thing for them this year. So if they have six, they're going to keep six to me.
Kristen, let me ask you a question so our listeners know. Allen Hurns is guaranteed $500,000 for this year.
Right.
How are the mechanics of trying to trade him this season?
Oh, trading him is pretty easy if somebody wants to do it. I don't think that there's it's just like cutting a guy. If whatever you've already paid him, you're going to have to expense one year or the other. That's not the issue. Actually, I was looking at Devontae Parker, and that's a little bit more of an interesting trade situation because he's got a two-year contract. Allen Hurns could be interesting in as much as he's on the one-year deal. If he does stay here in Miami And then they let him expire and walk. Remember, he's only 27 years old right now. They let him expire and walk and go somewhere else next year. Then that's another, that's more fuel. That's another log in the compensatory pick fire. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it ends up on the balance sheet and on one way for the compensatory picks. So that's something to keep in mind with some of these guys. But I think they can go with six. I think it should be a pretty easy decision. I think they want to keep Trent Irwin around on the practice squad. Mm-hmm. There's too much there, language out of them, body language out of them on Trent Irwin, I think. But if you're looking at, obviously, the guys we talked about, Albert Wilson and Kenny Stills and Devontae Parker with Jakeem Grant added in, that's four. And then you're going to look at Preston Williams, I think, is already number five. And then it's like, you know, Alan Hearns or Bryce Butler fighting for that number six spot. And
CK, who plays special teams then? Because they're going to need their receivers right. to play teams, right? So, I mean, obviously, Grant's going to play them as, you know, an mm-hmm. offensive special teams player.
Sure.
Who's playing on the other units? It's not going to be Parker, right?
It's not going to be Parker. But I think that they'll get either Alan Hearns or – well, I mean, Preston Williams is already playing special teams True. In these practices. Is he not, Alf?
Yeah, he has.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's part of the big load of reps that they're giving him all over the place. So I think that, yeah, he'll be playing special teams there. But I think you can get the special team snaps from other guys as well. Because there's only so many roles in special teams for the wide receivers specifically. But yeah, I think they'll get the reps, especially since Preston Williams will play special teams and can.
Well, let me ask you this, Chris, before we get into Atlanta mm-hmm. on Thursday. Isaiah Ford is finding mm-hmm. himself into more and more plays as these days go by. And Bryce Butler, I think we can all agree, is probably dead man walking. Mm-hmm. So Isaiah Ford, what is that about?
I think it's about the fact that he's not the most natural slot receiver on the roster, because I think that goes to Alan Hearns. But Isaiah Ford has experience being trained on as a slot receiver and by past regimes here in Miami, and he's viewed as that sort of man-beating route runner, I think. And so that's the role. That's the attraction with him. And you're right, he has – you hear his name a lot. I just don't think – I mean, this numbers game at this position is bad. So it's tough for him to catch on.
So the one other thing you guys mentioned, though, is that there is a tradition in this franchise – we've kind of hit on it – of receivers going from being undrafted to contributors, right, on this team.
Right.
I mean, you mentioned Bess. You mentioned you know, the way they picked up Gadsden out of the Arena League. Greg Camarillo is another one, came over.
Absolutely.
So it's not the craziest thing for a guy to come out of nowhere. And also, I do think that this serves a purpose for the new head coach, because Brian Flores is making this point over and over, right, that everybody's equal, right? Everybody's mm-hmm. equal. Everybody's starting in the same place. Takes no talent, right, although this kid has talent.
He's got talent.
But takes no talent. And this is going to be fair and even for everybody. I mean, he even said that. You know, I know Rashad Jones, somebody we may talk about tonight, but like, you know, Rashad Jones comes in and, you know, he's going to compete like everybody else. Well, if this kid wins it in camp, mm-hmm. if he's better than – Devontae's been really good. But if he's better than Devontae, he's probably not going to be ahead of Stills. But if he emerges and he gets the snaps, it is another message that he's able to send. And I really think this season, as much as anything for this team, is about two things. It's about cultivating young players and be part of the future. And it's about Flores setting the agenda that – everybody's going to compete and the best guys are going to play and there's not going to be any legacy stuff here. Mm-hmm. And so Preston Williams allows them to do both, really. And mm-hmm. so I think it provides that message. And also, you know, if they want to be a second chance organization too, which, you know, is something that the Dolphins were in certain days with certain coaches. It didn't work so well with some of them, you know, Lawrence Phillips and Cecil Collins, and et cetera. but I do think that there is a tone that they can set that way. So I think this has emerged as one of the top two or three stories, obviously quarterback, but one of the top two or three stories of camp so far. And I think he's going to be somebody that by the second preseason game that Dolphin fans will be like, wait, where did they get this kid? So, you know, you were on it early. I know you weren't the only one, but you were on it early, and mm-hmm. we should credit mm-hmm. you for that.
Yeah, I think going way back to May and the draft weekend, we talked about him a lot. We did almost a a whole segment on him in the draft
April,
review.
In an April podcast, we
did. Yeah, in the draft review podcast, we basically did almost an entire segment on him. And I thought then, and I think now that he was the second best player that they acquired on draft weekend. I thought that also I had him when I stacked the list of the entire offseason's acquisitions, all of them, free agency everywhere. I thought that he is the number two acquisition in the entire offseason, Preston Williams is. He's a talented player. And the thing is, everything is checking out for him right now. Everything is aces for him right now. And by that, I'm talking about the language out of the coaching staff about how he's handling the absorption of the offense and how he's working and the route running language that you're getting out of them, and not necessarily looking at him as, oh yeah, he's a big and fast kid and, you know, he can make big plays. And so, I mean, we've seen that before. But what you want to see is the stuff about the technical nuance, and that stuff's coming in right now. But we'll see. You know, he's going to go against good competition. We got a lot of other, you know, players on this roster, that a lot of other scratch off tickets that we're going to see come off in the preseason. Speaking of the preseason, Alf, you want to get into the Falcons game?
Well, yeah, they're going to play a game on Thursday. Very quickly, because we have about 5 minutes left in here. Chris, what do you want to see on Thursday?
Well, it's almost more – it's the preseason this year is almost going to be more interesting to me than some of the regular season games, because when the regular season starts off, it's going to be – I think it might be depressing. So I just want to preface that. That's my opinion. And when we start getting in – so I'm gonna be looking at – obviously I want to see if a guy like Preston Williams – starts making plays in the preseason on top of everything that we're hearing in training camp, because this could be, you want to see a player like him. It's sort of like, how deep does the rabbit hole go? And with a player like him and that talented, you just never know if it just keeps going deeper and deeper and he becomes a really good player. So I'm going to be looking at him. You're going to want to see how that first string offensive line is. If it starts to look pretty – if the first string offensive line, the one that we talked about earlier, with Dieter, Shaq Calhoun, Jesse Davis at right tackle, Daniel Kilgore at center, Laremy Tunsil at left tackle, if that unit looks shaky in the preseason, then
– 2-14 is in play. If that,
right. I mean, that's really what – because this is – I think they're throwing out kind of their best ball, almost their best ball. I think that – their absolute best would be finding a place for Chris Reed somewhere on that offensive line. But I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I know he has not been headline grabbing at training camp, but I think when the preseason game starts, he could look a little bit better. I think it's close to their best ball on the offensive line. And if it's not looking so hot, then start, you know, start worrying. But on the other hand,
but Chris, isn't that kind of how they guaranteed the tank? Like when I look at it and I'm looking at their skill guys, I'm like, their skill guys are not that bad. The
right.
Cornerback play could potentially be competent. I don't have high hopes for it. Because, right. You know, defensively, they're at least one. Right. They're defensively, they're pretty good players, you know, all over the place, except in the defensive line, I think is going to be a big problem. But
right.
Certainly in the secondary, their frontline guys are pretty good. To me, and their kicker's good. To me, what they've done is they've guaranteed the tank with the line. It's because they'll figure out a way to lose a ton of games, like, you know, 24-17 or something at the end, because there's a late sack strip. I feel like we're gonna see a lot of that. Like they're gonna be in a lot of games, but the line is gonna be a huge problem. And as good as Tunsil is, I mean, he can't hold the whole damn thing up. And you know, even we talk about if their first line, well, okay, they're going to be playing two rookies on there. And so there's going to be struggles no matter what, you know, no matter what else they do. And Kilgore wasn't great when he started the season last year. You hope he'll be better this year. But that to me is how they've guaranteed this thing. I mean, I'm going Thursday night. I think I'm the only one from Five Reasons going. That's what I'm watching is the line. Like I'm, you know, cause that to me is guarantees the tank. Like that's
the insurance policy.
Right. Right.
Well, I think the actual insurance policy might be in the secondary, and I know that that's where we have Xavien Howard and Minkah Fitzpatrick, and that is a good that should be a decent unit. But they're, I mean, you're only as good. I mean, especially if in a Patriots style approach, and when we play the Patriots, I mean, they will, whoever your weakest link is, they'll attack that guy, And they have some weak links in that secondary. And what I wonder in particular is if when you match that secondary together with the defensive front, and I think at certain points in the game, if you get into this situation, so let's say Kenyon Drake pops off a big run early in the game or third quarter or something like that, which he can do. He's fully capable. Or some of those receivers, those skill position players pop off a big play. Albert Wilson, you know, Jakeem Grant, Devontae Parker, somebody makes a big play and the Dolphins find themselves ahead. What happens when the other team goes pass, 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 we're going to run up and down the field on you in a, you know, sort of a passing situation, 2-minute drill. Miami's going to be coming at them with a defensive front. Say they try to put out a NASCAR front with four defensive ends. What defensive ends? You know, that's the question. The defensive front is not going to get there. The secondary is going to be as weak as the weak link. You've got a free safety on the back end who's 5'9" and not that fast. You know, that's so, or you got a, you know, the center field, and he's the last line of defense playing some deep center.
So let me ask you this, and I know we got to go. Will they give up twice as many sacks as they get this year? Because I say yes. I say they give up twice as many sacks. I think they give up 50 plus sacks, and I don't think they get to 25. Would you agree with that?
That's a hard ratio to get to. So
I think they're capable.
I think the 1-16 ratio.
That is the 1-16. That's a tough one to get to. I'm gonna wimp out and say no, not quite.
All right. I like their skill players. I do. I think
they've
guaranteed.
I do too.
On the lines.
I think they've got a bunch of scratch off tickets, and they're gonna find a number of players that need to be here going forward. Yeah, they clearly haven't built the central structure that they're going to need yet. And it does start at the quarterback position too, because for all Ryan Fitzpatrick, if you look at his advanced metrics and all that, and he had some perfect type games last year with the Buccaneers and some good seasons if you go back way back in history, he was also 2-6 last year with the Buccaneers. So, yeah, it comes on in a game where he just really lays it on. But then what, you know? And then we're looking at Josh Rosen, and that's the big wild card that we talked about earlier.
All right, Ethan, tell the people where they can find you.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to give it in my house, but I will give them at 5 Reason Sports. That's the number 5 at Ethan J. Skolnick. And of course, what I want to really push here, Alfredo, is our website, 5reasonsports.com. I'm trying to get CK to write us column about Preston Williams. Maybe that'll be on here this week. But check out 5reasonsports.com. We also have Dolphin Maven. We have Hurricane Maven. We have Heat Maven. We got a lot of content, but those are the major places to find us. And of course, check out the other podcasts in our network, as probably mentioned here in a promo on this episode. But Fish Tank this week, Jason Taylor for a sit down. I had Bam Adebayo on 5 on the Floor. So we're getting the biggest guests. And our network, unlike radio shows, we don't change the schedule on you.
And
download, listen when you want. And we are free, unlike the newspapers. So no paywall, unlike the newspapers. No screwy schedule changes where you're trying to find your favorite show like the radio station. So, you know, I think that's pretty – I think things are looking up for us, Alf. I'll just say that. By the way, we changed the name of the 5 Reasons. You know that, right? It's now 5 Reasons the Alf.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, to be honest with you.
Well, it didn't win the poll. The Juice won the poll because of me and OJ. Oh, but boy. I'm going to go with the Alf. I just think it sounds better. And, of course, we have a man. We have
your two biggest stars be, you know, the talisman of the
– Oh, then it's the Juice. Then it's the Juice. All right, so we'll go back to the Juice. Thanks, Alf. Appreciate it.
All right. That's it. There is no more. Enjoy the football game on Thursday. You actually get to watch football instead of us just talking about guys running around in their underwear. You get to watch football. All right, that's it. There is no more. We will talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.